are Genesis 12 through 50. My goal is to finish this up tonight on the story of Joseph. And so just as a quick recap, so, you know, through Joseph's dreams and interpretations that he had, at this time, Joseph is in prison. That's where we got up to last week. Joseph is in prison. And through the dreams he interprets for the chief baker, the Pharaoh's chief baker and chief cupbearer were in prison. Seems the Pharaoh just got ticked off with a bunch of his servants one time and threw them all in the slammer for whatever reason. And so they both had dreams. Joseph correctly interpreted those dreams for them. They came true. And so years later, the chief cupbearer, he was restored back to his position. And during that time frame, the Pharaoh had some dreams that were troubling him. And he was asking all his magicians and wise men and all this to, you know, hey, what do these mean? Nobody could give him a decent answer. And so that's when the cupbearer said, hey, I remember this guy back when, you know, when you like got all mad at me and threw me in the jail and stuff. There was this guy there who could interpret dreams, and he interpreted them correctly. And so Joseph was called before the Pharaoh. And he interprets the dream, saying that, well, what these dreams mean is that there's going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And so Joseph then makes a recommendation to the Pharaoh. You know, he didn't leave it at that. He just said, but so here's what I say you should do, man. You should get some wise men and put them on this task to prepare, you know, use these 7 years of plenty in preparation for the 7 years of famine. And the Pharaoh says, hey, that's a great idea. I'll tell you what, you're going to do it. And so he ends up making Joseph second in charge over the whole land of Egypt. And Joseph is given tremendous amount of power here. There's even one point where the Pharaoh says, you know, only on the throne will you be greater than me. But he says, even though I am the Pharaoh, even though I am Pharaoh, no one will lift a hand or a foot without your permission. And so, you know, the Pharaoh is kind of is putting Joseph real close there in the power. It's almost saying, even though I'm Pharaoh, there's some things that may or may not happen if you don't want it to. And so, you know, he gave Joseph a tremendous amount of power. Joseph is in an unbelievable position here. And, you know, again, second in charge of the whole land, but very close there in power-wise to the Pharaoh himself. Joseph was 30 years old at this time. 13 years had passed since his brothers plotted against him. That's a long time. You know, you think about what all has happened in the past 13 years of your life. I'm sure there's been some major changes. I know there have been in mine. 13 years is a long time. A lot of stuff can happen in there, especially in that 17 to 30-year-old range. You know, we can all probably think back to our 20s and think of all kinds of major changes and things of life that went on in that time frame. This is when, you know, that was what all happened to Joseph. And so a lot had happened there, but it was all in preparation for a mission that God had for him. And that's where we ended that that off last week, talking about, you know, using the story of Joseph, not just to see how God worked and to see how it all plays into the story of redemption, but also taking away from this, you know, something that can help us and encourage us. You know, there's a lot of times things just happen in our life and we have no idea why. I will tell you that I am guilty of sometimes looking skyward and saying, what is happening? Why, you know, what is going on? Why is this happening? You know, I can't say that I've ever pointed a finger of blame at God and said, this is your doings, you know, in anger, but I've definitely gone, what is going on? You know, and sometimes we don't know. And it may be years down the road before we have that answer. You know, and so sometimes it's years down the road, all of a sudden things just happen to work out, and lo and behold, it was triggered by what took place years earlier, and we can look back and say, oh, okay. And so if we keep that in mind, that can sometimes help the struggles of life to go down a little better. Because let's face facts, you know, those hard times of life, that is a big, nasty pill that is sometimes just shoved down our throats, okay? If I'm just going to be brutal about it like that. It's not fun. It's hard. It's forceful. sometimes you're not given a choice on these things. You just got to go through it. And sometimes, you know, it's hard. It's real hard. But if we can keep the forethought in our mind of something good will come from this, you know, that this will, in some way, somehow, it's going to be okay. I don't know how, but somehow it's all going to work out. And that can give us the encouragement and the fuel we need to push through and come out well on the other side. So where we're picking up, the severe famine strikes, and it Genesis 41:56 says that it affected the whole earth. Now, you know, whether that was literally the entire earth or just the known world at that time, I don't know. But this famine was very severe, and it affected people for, you know, miles and miles and miles and miles and miles around. People were all, you know, they heard that there was food in Egypt. People were coming to Egypt to buy food. And Jacob was one such person. He heard there was food, and so he sends his son to Egypt to buy food. In Genesis 42, 1 through 5, now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. And Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" He said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there, excuse me, and buy for us, and buy some for us from that place, so that we may live and not die." Let's see. Where am I here? Okay. Then the 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt, but Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "I am afraid that harm may befall him." So the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those who were coming, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also. Well, why are you staring at one another? This is a question that Jacob presents to his 10 sons. You know, we're talking about Reuben, Judah, Simeon, Dan, you know, Naphtali, all these guys. The same guys that plotted to kill their own brother and instead sold him into slavery, okay? These are the guys. What does this say about them? Yeah, they obviously just have no gumption, do they? You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but if I am starving and there's just no food around and I'm left to, you know, start resorting to bugs and whatever else I might have to survive, and I hear, "Hey, there's food in Egypt," part of me thinks I might go to Dad and say, "Hey, Dad, I think me and my boys are going to load up and go to Egypt and get us some food. How does that sound to you?" But instead, they're just sitting around staring at one another, you know, sitting on their hands, as we might describe it. So, you know, again, it kind of goes to show me that these just weren't the most upstanding of dudes that we're talking about here, you know. And we've looked at many stories. You know, it was Simeon, I believe, who had an affair with one of his dad's wives, his own stepmom, as it were, you know. I mean, what kind of son does that to his dad, you know? Levi and, oh, I can't remember the other one. They went in and, absolutely slaughtered a bunch of people. It was in defense of their sister. Okay, we can understand that, but man, you talk about a brutal attack and way of handling a situation. They let their anger get way out of control, and it could have ended up causing a lot of problems in the end for Jacob. You know, you look at Judah, who ended up thinking his own widowed daughter-in-law was a prostitute and had a sexual relationship with her. I mean, these are some messed up guys we're talking about. And so, you know, when it doesn't surprise me for Jacob to walk in and say, "Why are you guys just sitting around crying out loud? You know, do something for goodness sakes." And so, you know, again, kind of supporting that idea that I've pitched in here before, that these just weren't the sharpest tools in the shed that we're dealing with, yet God used them to accomplish his mission nonetheless. And there's something to learn from that. Why do you think Jacob was so concerned about Benjamin? You know, he was saying to them all, "Hey, y'all go down there, but Benjamin, yeah, he's going to stay here."
Last child of Rachel.
Yeah, last child of Rachel. Yeah. And she died giving birth to him, didn't she? You know, if you notice, and we've talked about this before, Jacob really held Joseph close, okay? And look, Rachel was his true love. That's just all there is to it, okay? He didn't want to marry Leah, and when it comes down to it, he probably didn't want Bilhah and Zilpah neither. But just because of the way the times rolled back then, he ended up with three wives that he never asked for. He never proposed the option of marriage to. He was just said, well, you got to take them too, you know? And so Rachel was his real true love. And so Joseph and Benjamin, he just had a better relationship with them. He had a deeper care and concern for them. And probably even more so for Benjamin here, because his true love died giving birth to Benjamin. I do. I think there's probably some resentment there. That would be my guess. I know if I were one of those sons, I would be very resentful of it. Yeah. Yeah, but you think even before then, you know, the other boys were out in the field working. Where was Joseph? You go, Hank. What's that? Yeah, he's sitting at home, laid back with his coat of many colors, isn't he? You know, and he's the one where daddy's saying, hey, go down there to Shechem, check on the boys, make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, come back, give me a report. Man. You know, yeah, that wouldn't go over too well with me. You know, and so, you know, there's a lot of troubled, this was a troubled family, it really was, with a lot of issues. And, you know, Jacob, he was a sorrowful man. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened to this guy. You know, we don't talk about that much, and we don't really think about that much because the focus is all on Joseph and Egypt and what, you know, that whole thing. But if you read through the story, we really see that, man, Jacob's life was one tragedy after the other, it seems. You know, he struggled in the first place having children with Rachel. Now, we're told that God was behind that because he saw that Leah was not loved. You know, Leah was Jacob's wife nonetheless. Jacob didn't really have much of a care for Leah. So God made her very fruitful. And it says that he closed up Rachel's womb. And so, you know, he struggled having children with Rachel. And let's face facts, that can be a difficult thing. We've all probably have known people in our lives who have had a difficult time getting pregnant. That's not something fun to go through. It sometimes can be very disturbing and very heartbreaking and very difficult for a woman and a man and a wife to go through. And so that's something that they had to struggle through, though. Also, he thought his firstborn and long sought after child with Rachel was mauled by a wild animal. You know, not only is it his favorite son and the firstborn of his true love, you know, not just that he died, but he was ripped to pieces by a wild animal. That's the thought Jacob had. And for years, for 13 years at least, maybe more. We don't necessarily know when the whole Joseph, you know, reacquainting himself with his brothers, how long that whole thing took place. But for at least 13 years, this man sat with the mindset that my son was torn to shreds by a lion or something like that. That just can't be easy to deal with. You know, losing a child, I can't imagine how hard that must be. But you know, the way someone dies always affects us differently, doesn't it? You know, we might tend to be able to handle a death better depending on how it took place. And I just could not imagine, you know, losing a child, but I don't know, just something about the thought of my child being torn apart by a wild animal, that adds a whole different level to it. But that's what Jacob dealt with. You know, he lost his true love while giving birth to a child. I mean, again, boom, just one tragedy after another. This man is getting hit hard in life, folks. Super hard. And, you know, aside from just the tragic events that took place, you know, as we just talked about, there are a lot of family issues. that were going on here. A lot of struggles just within the family itself. And certainly that had to weigh on Jacob's mind. Brent?
His whole life was sort of like that.
It was, wasn't it?
His mother and his father.
Yes.
Let's steal this from my brother.
Yeah, and you know, that leads to the question. You know, you can't help but wonder if perhaps all of this that went down was some form of judgment that he was facing. You know, he didn't necessarily do his own brother right. He didn't do his own father right. You know, so you can't help but wonder if maybe, well, you know, this is just something he had to deal with due to, like you were saying, you know, the things that he did as a youngster.
The Lord or the angel of the Lord had to break him when he wrestled.
Yeah.
He was crippled the rest of his life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Jacob was obviously a very interesting guy. You know, we're not told a whole lot about him, but
not very
spunky. No. Yeah. 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 So, you know, he went through a whole lot of stuff, and I just wanted to point that out as just something to think about, you know, because I like digging into characters and their stories, because I think there's a lot we can learn from them. And, you know, to see how things came out and all that. Bob?
Although Jacob went through all this, Joseph, the same, went through the same thing. So, yeah. I mean, he even pulled the same thing that his father did, you know, lying about Rachel. You know, he told him that he was his sister instead of a wife because he was
scared. Oh, you're talking about Abraham. Abraham and Isaac.
Abraham.
Yeah, yeah.
He did the same thing. Abraham went through the same thing. They all seemed to do it.
Sure. Yeah.
So it seemed like everybody
in
the Bible has to go.
Sure. Well, to me, the thing to take away again is that, you know, even those great people of faith have some serious flaws, you know, and they struggle with a lot of the same doubts, a lot of the same struggles, and the same lack of faith that I struggle with. And that's something to draw comfort from.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, we can still be saved and we can still be used by God to accomplish the things that He wants to accomplish, right? Yeah. All right. So when we continue to talk about, you know, Jacob and him being a sorrowful man, in Genesis 47, I'm kind of just jumping ahead here real quick for this point. This is when Jacob has come to Egypt, and we'll get to this point in just a little bit. Like I said, I'm just kind of jumping ahead here. Jacob's before the Pharaoh. Joseph brings his dad in and introduces him to the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh's, you know, just talking to him and trying to find out more about Jacob and his life, you know, just having a conversation. And he says, "Well, how old are you?" And Jacob says, "Well, the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life." And I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, when you think of everything he's gone through, I could say that few and unpleasant they have been, you know. And he says, "Nor have they attained the years that my fathers before me lived during the days of their sojourning." And so, you know, I wanted to point that out again. You know, we see the mindset of Jacob just... You just get this feeling of a very wearied and beat down and broken man, you know. Probably not really sure what to think much of about life anymore. Anyhow, so Joseph's brothers arrive in Egypt, and Joseph recognizes them, and he begins to test them in various ways, and he really gives it to them. And I'm not going to get into all that. You can go read it for yourself. It's a somewhat humorous story, but at the same time, it's like, wow. You know, we all look back and say, well, Joseph never took revenge on his brothers. I don't know. He may have taken a little bit here. He gave them a really hard time. And, you know, why he did all this, I don't really know. My guess is that he was just trying to test them in various ways, you know, using them to get information about his dad and his, you know, Benjamin and the family and da-da-da. Without revealing who he was. You know, when somebody just it's kind of like me, I guess. If I went to the local Publix and all of a sudden the manager comes out and starts, you know, asking me all about my family and everything, I'm like, how do you know my dad? How do you know my brother? You know, they live in Alabama. What do you know about them? You know? And so this is probably kind of the same idea here. You know, they show up to Egypt thinking, hey, we're just going to go over here to the local grocery store and buy some food. And all of a sudden, the vice president of Egypt comes out and starts asking them questions, you know. And so it could kind of, if he did it the wrong way, well, it could tip the brothers off that, hey, that's Joseph. You know, he doesn't want that. The Bible tells us that Joseph even disguised himself when he first came and started talking to him. And so, you know, he may have done all this as a way to extract information without revealing, you know, who he was and what he truly knew. But so we see that he does all this and he puts him in jail for 3 days. And then he ends up holding Simeon hostage and sends his brothers back and says, if you return, you need to bring your younger brother with you. Don't even come back here without him. And so they do this. He actually puts all their money back into their food bag. So he doesn't even make them pay for the food. He just sends all the money back with them, unbeknownst to them until they get way on down the road. And so the sons return. They tell Jacob what all took place and how they were treated. And am I going backwards here or what? And so they want to go back. You know, food. Am my slides getting out of order here or what? What'd I do? Sorry, hang on a second. Okay, so I got my slides a little bit out of order here. So in Genesis 43, so, you know, again, Simeon was left behind. He said, I'm keeping Simeon. I'm keeping this one. And you guys can go back. And so it says in chapter 43, verse 2, that Jacob sent them back when they had eaten all the grain they purchased. That one kind of struck me weird. You know, if I'm a dad here, hey, I got six kids, you know. And so if one of them is in a jail in the next country over, I don't really think I'm going to be, we'll just leave them there, honey, until we finish up this and we have to send the kids back for some more food. We'll tend to him then. That kind of struck me odd, but nonetheless, that's what Jacob does. And when it boils down to it, it probably had something to do with not wanting to send Benjamin, as we'll see here in just a second. So they run out of food, though, and Jacob says, hey, y'all go back to Egypt and get more food. And Judah says, not unless we take Benjamin. And that's where we get to this verse while I got things out of order. It says, their father Jacob said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph's no more, Simeon's no more, and you want to take Benjamin too? You're out of your mind, boys, and not happening. You know, all these things are against me. And Reuben spoke to his father saying, you may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taking, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow. Again, we see just the mourning nature of Jacob here, saying, you are out of your mind, boys. I've already lost Joseph. Now I've lost Simeon, and you're asking me to send Benjamin, you know, Joseph's brother. And it's interesting that he points that out, huh? You know, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead. All right? He's not saying y'all's brother. It's Benjamin's brother is dead. And take note of that. And so, again, you know, he's saying, man, if something happens to Benjamin, you can just stick a fork in me. I'm done. You know, he wouldn't be able to handle it. And so, let's see. So Jacob finally relents, and he agrees to send Benjamin alone, because Judah's like, look, this guy, this man that I'm telling you about, Dad, he's not some gentle guy, all right? If we show up without Benjamin, bad things are going to happen. They're afraid of the man, as they keep referring to him as. But Joseph, they're afraid of him. They're afraid of what he might do. So Jacob finally relents and he sends Benjamin along with them. And he pretty much resigns himself to losing another child. And you can go read that for yourself in 43:14. He says, whatever, it doesn't even matter anymore. You know, life itself has just been destroyed for me as it is, so fine, take him. What does it matter? And so so the sons return to Egypt with Benjamin, and Joseph treats them rather kindly. He brings them in, gives them food. He treats Benjamin really nice, though. He gives Benjamin like five times more food at the feast he throws than he does the other brothers. And so he deals kindly with his brothers. I might be getting along a little faster than what I intended to. So Joseph contends with his brothers some more, and this time he attempts to keep Benjamin as well, while sending his brothers back home again. And Judah says, oh dear. And so Judah goes and he tries to talk with him and saying, look, my dad didn't want to send Benjamin, okay? He did not want to send my youngest brother along. If we go back without him, you're pretty much signing his death warrant, okay? You're signing his death certificate. He will not be able to handle it. He will not take it well. I don't know what dad might do to himself if I show up without Benjamin. I mean, this is kind of the mindset that we see coming out in Judah here. Very concerned about Jacob's well-being here if he were to show back up, or if the sons were to come back without Benjamin. And so they kind of go back and forth through this a lot. And finally, Joseph just can't do it anymore, and he reveals himself to his brothers. And so they have this great reunion. Joseph is crying uncontrollably, which this is one of several events. We see several times, if you go read the story, about how Joseph had to go off in his private chambers and just wept bitterly. You know, he was really having to exercise a tremendous amount of self-control in playing out this little thing he was trying to do with his brothers. And so he finally, though, he couldn't take it anymore, and he revealed. He says, guys, it's me. It's Joseph, okay? And let's just get this out. And they hug, and they weep, and the brothers are just stunned, can't believe it, you know. And so we start to see the trust that Joseph had in God. I want to touch on that for a bit. In Genesis 45, verses 5 through 8, it says, now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. We see it again in Genesis chapter 50. Again, I'm kind of skipping ahead here real quick. This is after Jacob had died. All right, Jacob had just died, and the brothers are getting scared. They're saying, oh boy, dad's dead. Joseph is going to have it out on us now, you know, that now that dad's not around to stop him and do anything about it, we're done. And so they go and they start pleading to Joseph, saying, hey, look, you know, have mercy on us, we're your servants. They fall prostrate before him, and, you know, they're really scared and terrified about what Joseph might do. But Joseph says, do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, yeah, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. And so he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. And so we see in these two passages, Genesis 50 here and also in Genesis 45, that by this time, Joseph had come to a strong understanding of what was going on. And this is often the way things kind of work in our life, isn't it? You know, we go through hard times and it doesn't make sense. You know, we're sitting here trying to do the best we can, you know, busting our tails every day to do what's right and to keep the family together and to train our children this and to do our jobs well and you name it. And then, pow, And some tragedy comes swooping in out of nowhere and wipes out life. And there for a moment, we feel utter hopelessness. And, you know, and that to me, that's the hard part. You know, I was talking to my brother the other day. We were talking about, you know, just this. He was talking about a guy. There was some, I think he was a former Florida State player, maybe. I want to say he played college for either Florida State or University of Florida one, and he ended up going pro. And he lost it. He got married, but he lost his wife to cancer. I can't remember the guy's name. But he ended up losing his wife to cancer. Well, apparently he was at one of the local churches in Montgomery recently, and they kind of had this thing where he came in and kind of shared, you know, his story and all this. And Joey said, my brother Joey said, you know, it was just really moving to him. And, you know, we just kind of got to talking about, you know, handling the tragedies and the hardships of life. And I said, you know, I feel the church is really good at helping people through tragedies. You know, perhaps there's some areas where we can strengthen ourselves up, especially in the realm of counseling. You know, I know Mike has done a lot of counseling, and I think that's something, me personally, I feel the church needs to get more involved in, providing Christian counseling, because that's a hard thing to find. You know, there's a load of counselors out there, but finding some that can help you from a Christian point of view and you know, from that mindset, they're tough to find. And so, you know, that things like that, support groups to help facilitate these things, you know, but there are those kind of things out there, and they're very helpful. But I told my brother, I said, to me, the hardest part is that immediate following of when the tragedy strikes. You know, when the tragedy strikes and it's just there, it's reality, it's sometimes a very hopeless place to be. It's very hard. And you find yourself just throwing up your hands and say, well, what am I going to do now? What does it matter anymore? I felt that. It's a sick feeling. It's a very hard feeling. You know, as time goes on, though, you start to move by it. And you start to find that healing. You start to find strength. You know, and things just begin to roll. But, I mean, it's in that immediate moment, though, immediately after it hits. Man, it's such a sick feeling. Such a hard, hard thing to deal with, and you just sometimes feel like life itself is over. What does it matter anymore? That's why I like this story. I like this story because it gives me hope in those times of hopelessness.
Mike. 2 Corinthians 1 talks about comforting each other with the comfort that God has given us. Mm. So when you go through something, you're now probably the best person equipped.
Sure. Yeah. And that's something I thought about a lot. You know, having walked in the shoes, I can kind of help be there and say, look, I know what that feeling is like, but I promise you everything's going to be okay. You know, I know it doesn't feel like it's going to be, but it's going to. Just trust me in this, you know. And I tend to lean heavily on this story and the story of Job. When the hard times have come on in my life, just because this tells me that, you know what, Kirk, this is happening to move you to something bigger and better that God is wanting to use you for. And as a Christian, that gives me a lot of comfort. Now, as an unbeliever, that means, you know, that obviously wouldn't mean much to me. But as a believer and as a follower of Christ, that gives me hope, that gives me comfort. And that gives me some fuel to keep pushing through and keep trudging through. You know, I mean, sometimes you feel like you're just this deep in the muck, you know, and I mean, you're really having to, you know, just gut through it. But these stories help. You know, this story helps me tremendously. I can't help but wonder what Joseph must have felt when his brothers wanted to kill him. What a sick, hopeless feeling that must have been, to have your own family, your own brothers, throw you into a pit and say, yeah, we'll come back and kill you in a little bit. What do you do when you're sitting there in the bottom of that pit? Talk about hopelessness. And then you're sold into slavery, and then you're falsely accused and thrown into a prison. Folks, I've never spent a night in jail, but I certainly don't ever want to. I don't even care to spend 30 minutes in jail. You know, to me, that would just be a horrifying and frightening thing. And, you know, I think about Joseph being falsely accused and thrown into a prison. Well, how do you find hope in that? By knowing his story. That's how. You know, so Joseph was able to look back after all these years and say, look, I know what's going on. I can see it now. You know, you guys meant this for evil against me, but God meant this for good. He meant this to preserve you a remnant on the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. And indeed, this was a great deliverance. This was huge. I mean, God started planning this thing 20 years earlier, maybe. You know, we don't think like that, do we? You know, we tend to think in the very immediate sense, you know. Man, God had this thing in motion years, decades before it even happened. Brent?
Joseph had the dream, and I think this is what we don't.
Yes, it is.
You're going to bow down before me.
Yeah, indeed it is.
So it was a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things to be said about that. You know, when we look at when Jacob was on his deathbed, he kind of sat his boys down and said, look, here's what's going to be happening with y'all's futures. And he kind of said some things to Judah. I tried to read up on it some, but a little bit over my head, as it were. So, but he said some things to Judah that really were prophesying that, look, from you, there's going to come something really great. And, you know, it really, he was basically saying in his own way, back in those times when the whole idea of the Messiah coming and resetting things and fixing things and restoring things was kind of unheard of. You know, the whole nation of Israel wasn't even heard of at that point, you know. So it was kind of Jacob's way of prophesying about the coming of Christ in his own meager understanding that he may have had at that time. But he, you know, he prophesied about that through Judah. If you go and read the text, you'll see what I'm talking about. But yeah, you know, it did. And again, you know, Judah was a messed up guy. Judah had some problems. But yet, so did David. So did Solomon. So did Rahab. You know, I mean, we see all these guys. Mike? Hey, I'll give you a chocolate for speaking, that's all.
But Joseph, you know, he's betrayed, you know, by his brothers, you know, and he goes through some moral situations. And, Potiphar's wife basically betrays him. He's stuck in prison. But he maintains a remarkable ethic all throughout. He realizes, and maybe it was revealed to him, it doesn't really say,
yeah.
But he realizes that this is from God. He's not in a church like all of us.
Sure.
You know, he's not amongst the Jews or the Hebrews at the time, and his family. What I see here is his mother, Rachel, is kind of the common factor that she must have been a remarkably godly woman and instilled something in him, or how he was brought up. I mean, I don't know. I just find it really remarkable.
It is.
How he turned out. I mean, you see the prodigal son, you know, and of course it's a parable, but he goes off. He's chasing women.
Sure.
You know, what Joseph does, he flees from women.
Yeah.
You know? Pleased to God.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, of course, the prodigal son comes back. But you see this remarkable foundation in Joseph. You know, his other brothers don't seem to
have
that. And the common link to me it seems to maybe be that Rachel is his mother. You know, it's not Jacob the father who's maybe instilled this.
Sure.
It's Rachel.
Well, but, a question, Mike. What was the age difference between Benjamin and Joseph?
It just amazes me that he lives in a pagan land for so long. So, which, you know, you see throughout
for 17 years.
Well, yeah, Joseph was 17 when he was sold. I don't know how old Benjamin was. I imagine he was pretty young at that time.
But
yes, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm
just. Something there that's very remarkable to me.
Yeah. I know. Yes, fully agree. I fully agree with you, and I had thought about that. I mean, Joseph is an amazing man. He's easily one of my favorite characters in the Bible. I mean, just a upstanding guy. I can't remember if you were here when I said it a week or two ago, when I was mentioned how when Joseph fled from Potiphar's wife, you know, the first thing out of his mouth was, "I'm not going to do this to my God." You know, a lot of men would say, "I wouldn't do that to, I'm not going to do that to my wife." Or, you know, "No, I'm not going to steal from my company. I'm not going to do that to my company. I'm a loyal employee." You know, Joseph's first thought goes to God, though. You know, and it wasn't his secondary thought went to, "I'm also not going to do this to my master, Potiphar." You know, And I challenged us all, and even myself, you know, to retool our own thinking, you know, because a lot of times if, you know, my immediate thought, if some woman tried to make a move on me, my thought was, "You're crazy, I'm not doing this to my wife," you know, but man, what if my thought went to God first, you know? Yeah.
That's what they practiced daily, and that's what they worshiped. He didn't see other people. He didn't come to church like this,
right,
worship, you know, like we did, and be around common people. He was in a very pagan group, but he stayed loyal to God.
Yeah.
And I think what it can tell us sometimes is we think sometimes we get in a world, people are you know, our culture gets corrupt. It doesn't mean we can't stay loyal to God.
Yes.
Even if we're in the middle of it day in and day out, because we can still stay loyal to God. Joseph.
Absolutely. Amen. Absolutely. All right, so as we move on, you know, as everything comes out, the Pharaoh offers for Jacob's, or Joseph's family rather, to move to Egypt and offers the best of the land. A lot of stuff is sent to pick him up. At first, Jacob doesn't believe what's going on, but it says that his spirit was revived and that all the direct descendants, that's the blood relatives, so the Bible specifically says, it's not talking about his daughters-in-law, but his sons, grandchildren of Jacob that moved to Egypt, that they were 70 people. And so we already see a nice little band of people are moving into the area. It goes on to say that his family grew very large in Egypt. They acquired property and became very fruitful. And this is going to be important as we get into Exodus, so keep this in mind. We see that very quickly the people of Israel, and when we're talking about Israel, who are we talking about?
Jacob.
Okay, remember, God changed Jacob's name to Israel. Okay, so when we're talking about the people of Israel, they started off very quickly in Egypt of multiplying and becoming that nation that God had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that they would become. It's starting here. Jacob lived in Egypt for 17 years, and he died at the age of 147. As his health began to fade, he made Joseph promise to bury him back in Canaan with Abraham and Isaac. And we see that that Joseph ended up doing that. He went and buried him in that cave in the field of Machpelah, which Abraham had purchased. That's also where Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, and Rebekah, and also Leah were buried. He blessed each of his sons. He also kind of gave them a little prophecy of, hey, here's what's going to happen with all y'all, okay? It's a hard narrative to read if you go and read the prophecy, and for us it's kind of like, okay, whatever that might mean. We can draw a few things out of it, especially like I said with Judah. You know, there's some things that we can, you know, knowing what we know now, we can see, you know, what Jacob was getting at. I don't think we're ever told that I can.
Joseph,
yeah.
Yeah, it was
the daughter of one of the priests in Egypt. Okay. If you guys will give me just a couple more minutes, I'll wrap this up. So he made his, one of the things Joseph did is he made his family swear to take his bones with them when God carried them out of Egypt. So here we are hundreds of years before it ever takes place. And Joseph says, you know what? Abraham, Isaac, my dad, they all said that God was going to do this. When God carries y'all out of here, he's going to do it. And when he does, you take my bones with you. Do not leave me here in this place. You take them with me, or take them with you. And we see that happened. Moses took them in Exodus 13 and Joshua 24. Joseph ended up finally having a burial place in Canaan. And Hebrews 11, Joseph's statement here makes it into the hall of faith, as I like to call it. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. And so that's coming up. That's the end of Genesis. But one more thing I want to add that I forgot to add a slide on, and I hit on this last week. You know, Joseph is one of these pivotal points in the scriptures. Okay, he's like a hinge. All right, I mean, it all pivots here on him. Suppose Joseph had failed. Do we realize the ramifications of that? Now, we can all say, well, God would have just found a workaround. Okay, yeah, I'll go with you on that. But, you know, Joseph was God's chosen vessel here. He had a mission for Joseph. Suppose Joseph said, you know what, I'm done with this, and walked away. It's quite possible that all his brothers, folks, would have died in the famine, thus putting an end to the path of redemption to the cross. And that's something important for us to think about. Because what that tells us is that it is important for us to keep on keeping on. As a loved brother taught us here. Keep on keeping on.
Hang on. That's where prayer comes in. You know, you say, why should I pray? You know, God knows the beginning and the end. He knows what I want. But by praying into people, he makes these things happen so he won't fail.
Sure. 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 That's right. And we have got to lean on that, don't we? On prayer and just that knowledge that God's going to see this thing through. It's going to be okay. If we can ever come to grips with that and implant that in our minds and let that take over our lives, it'll change things. All right, it will. And it'll help those, you know, that big fat pill I was talking about a bit ago of tragedy and hard times of life that's being crammed down our throats sometimes like it does. It makes it go down a little smoother. You know, it's like coating it with some honey or something, you know. It just helps it out. And leaning upon God, casting all of our anxiety upon Him, for He cares for us. Okay? We have to realize that. We have to understand that I might be a pivotal point in history. Think about that. You know, when you're going through tough times in your life, maybe you're a modern day Joseph. You know, who hundreds of years from now, something that you did right will change the course of history for all of mankind. You don't know. I don't know. Joseph most likely didn't even know how huge of an impact he had on me and you. Because of his success, Christ came. The cross happened. And we're here. We're here on the orange carpet. Partly because of the success of Joseph thousands of years ago. We got to keep that kind of stuff in our minds. This is the kind of stuff that has the power to change our lives. This is this kind of stuff that gives us that fuel to push on through and tell Satan he can take a hike. We're not giving up. All right? So I love this lesson. I hope you guys learned a lot from it. I mean, the story of Joseph has had a massive impact on my life. And I hope I was able to relate all that to you and give you the strength and encouragement you need of this story to maybe help you with something that's going on in your life. Or there's something that might come. Let's face facts, man. When the tragedies come, good grief, they like to blindside you. You won't even know it. You turn around and wham! Where'd that come from? All right, so let's lean on these stories. Let's apply them to our lives and let it change our lives and direct us. All right, thank you so much for your time and comments. Next week, we'll pick up in Exodus, and we'll get into the next major section of our story.